Are you right? Are we right? Good morning. This is Floyd J. Winters on the Morning Edge. And welcome to the frog in my voice. But here to redeem me is Augie. Good morning, Augie.
Good morning, Floyd, and good morning, Tampa Bay. Well, the big CNN debate tonight at the Reagan Library. Ronnie would love it. And what was his wife? Oh, Nancy. And Sinatra always devoted the song. What was the song? Nancy
These with the laughing face. These boots are made for walking.
Well, no. He devoted to Nancy Reagan.
Oh.
Nancy with the laughing face. And and of course, toward the end of Ronnie's career as president, his second term, he would turn to Nancy and say, "What are they talking about? I can't remember what they just said." Anyway, his library is on the edge of a fire, actually, on one side of the library, which looks like an oasis in a desert, which is in the middle of a desert on a mesa. You have a situation where the fires of that whole area could engulf the Reagan Library. Floyd, what the debates? You know, I watched the Trump debate go on for at least a half hour in Dallas with 20,000 people. It looked like a convention. He had people behind him, and he's raising his arms, and they're all cheering and so forth. Everything he said, he leans on the podium and looks at the camera and says, "Well, you know, what do you do about this? You know, this. What do you do when you have people like Jeb? A nice guy, but what do you do about that?" And then, so he gets a boo, and they say, "Well, what about Hillary? A bigger boo." Well, I can see there's one person that Jeb is more popular than, because the boos are a little bit less. And then he goes on this one person by one person situation, and what they said, and who said what. And Carly, now look at this, talk about looking at a face. He talked about that, and now she's running ads, say, "Look at this face, look at that face, look at this face. This is the face of America, blah, blah, blah." Pretty good return against what Trump has said. And then you have Sanders. Bernie, let it burn, live and burn. I have a favorite saying called, I may put this on my tombstone, Floyd, live and burn. I don't know if I'll spell it B-E-R-N or not, but burn with Bernie is where we're headed. He had 18,000 people, and he was in South Carolina at Liberty College or Liberty University, at a place you would not think he would get wild cheering, but boy, he sure did. This socialist, I don't think people understand socialism worth a damn, but Floyd, you want to talk about Bernie?
Well, first of all, Bernie just turned 74, and elected president, he'd be 75, the oldest ever elected president. And you kind of think, well, that's pretty doggone old. Well, take a look at who's running also against him is Donald Trump, 69, Hillary Clinton, 67. So Donald would be 70 if he got elected. Hillary would be 68 if she got elected. Joe Biden, if he got into the race and got successful, would be 73. We've got an old bunch of candidates right now. But anyway, so Bernie this week just turned 74 years old.
They say live and learn.
Live and learn. And I actually sent him a check because I believe in Bernie Sanders. And if you kind of disagree with what I believe in, give us a call at 941-745-1490. But let me give you a list of Bernie's campaign brochure that he has right here. He mentions the sixth largest financial institutions now have assets equal to nearly 60% of our GDP. And major corporations that own billions in profits stash their money.
Let me stop you there a second. Yeah. I wonder what people understand about GDP.
Gross domestic product.
Now, what does that mean, Floyd? Do you know what that means? That means all the products you sell or are projected to sell within a certain period of time in that particular year, the percentage of that, which is in the trillions. So when you have a high percentage against trillions, you have a lot of money, and you have a lot of production and so forth. Unemployment has gone down to 5.1%. So here you have a pretty good situation from 7 years ago. But go ahead, Floyd. I'm sorry.
And what they're saying is that these corporations, financial corporations that are too big to fail, if they actually have that much money, 60% of our gross domestic product.
The country goes down.
That's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. And we're back to where we had been when we had the Great Recession. Yeah. These financial institutions that are kind of playing games with our money that are really under-regulated right now. And Bernie says this is not healthy for our economy, not healthy for our government.
That's where he and Trump agree, by the way.
And there's an amazing amount of agreements between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Yeah. That's part of it. And they believe, both of them believe, that why is it a person who makes their money playing in the financial markets should be taxed at a rate of about 14%, where I as a teacher or somebody else as a cop is taxed at a rate of 25 to 35%.
But you don't risk anything with that little job you have. They risk everything, Floyd.
The cops risk their lives.
Well, but I mean, and what I'm saying, Floyd, is the investors, they sit and watch their money. Oh, no, I've lost today. No, I've gained today. It's up and down, up and down. And you and your little job, if you lose your job, you're really up against the wall.
And this is a situation that kind of gets me. In order to be playing these financial markets with this kind of money, you've got to have hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars that you're playing with, and yet they're being taxed on their income at 14%, but cops and teachers are paying 25 to 35%
of taxes. If you lose money in your job because you didn't get income, can you take a write-off on your income tax? That person who invests his money and loses money on the market can take a write-off. He takes a loss. He can reduce his tax even further because you as an individual worker, secretary, teacher, policeman, whatever, cannot do that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And, yeah, I think that's a good point. So Bernie Sanders, oddly enough, agrees with Donald Trump. Now, again, if you're listening to us, do you think it's fair that a person who makes their money off of money should be paying half the tax rate as we do, as the average working stiff who sweats for their labor? And I find it repulsive. Donald Trump agrees with that.
You'd take the money.
Jeb Bush agrees with that. Well, heck, you have Warren Buffett who says, you know, that's what the tax rate is, but he says it's wrong. Here's a Democrat who says it's not fair that his secretary, yeah, pays twice the tax rate that Warren Buffett pays.
In that conversation, well, Buffett has had that conversation with a number of people, but I've heard him make this comment on his own feelings about the tax rate. And he says, so raise it 10%. So raise it. I'll still stay in business. I won't go out of business. He says, the tax rate doesn't matter to people like myself. We deal with money all the time, and money works for us. Workers are work to get money on the sweat and the intellect that they have, and they're in a far different situation. They're in a fixed, trapped circumstance, almost on a chain, almost on a treadmill. But a guy like Buffett, or you can go on down the pipe, the local banker who happens to be an investor, all these people who let money work for them are people who don't rely on the sweat of their brow nearly as much. And that's the unfairness, and that's what Bernie's talking about. Half, one-tenth of 1%, one-tenth of 1% are equal in their income and their total business to about 40% of the nation's revenues from all the other workers. And you are going to let those people off the hook.
And with our government,
and I mean, I'm agreeing with Bernie here.
We have the best, and also Donald Trump.
And Trump,
we have the best government money can buy right now. They have bought our Congress. They basically 85% of congressmen, when they leave office, they go and work as lobbyists, lobbying Congress and the different
things. Let me interject.
Basically, allow themselves to pay smaller tax bills at the expense of the poor. To have offshore havens that are legal. To have offshore accounts. And to outsource our businesses and our jobs. And you get tax breaks to outsource American jobs, to ship American jobs to India and China.
Well, do you remember a certain candidate that ran before that's now coming out and supporting Trump, I believe, and that was Romney. And he worked for Bain Capital. And I remember a particular situation that goes right along with what you're talking about, Floyd, and that was in Freeport, Illinois. They made aluminum products there in Freeport. I've done business in Illinois and in Freeport in particular at one time. And Freeport's a town at that time, in the back in the 60s, was probably about 30, 40,000 people. I think it's shrunk since then. But this one company hired by itself about 5,000 people. It was a major part of that community. And he went in and bought it, closed it down, offered jobs to the managers to go to China to set up the same business and make the same product, or supposedly the same product, and sell it back to you and me, through Walmart, through Home Depot, whatever, and you're buying, oh, I saved money. And you save money buying a product that came from Chinese sweat instead of American sweat, but with the help of Mr. Romney.
And Romney and his party helped to make China stronger. And they don't understand it's our competition. They're making China stronger, and they're spending a lot of this excess money that's come from shipping American jobs to China by getting tax breaks to ship American jobs to China. This tax money, this money they've made, this extra income, is going into their military. And they're really starting to spread their wings right now in that part of the region. And it's kind of scary. We're actually strengthening our enemy, our potential enemy.
Well,
I don't want to see China as our enemy, but we're strengthening what could be a potential enemy.
I think really, if we make them an enemy, we've really made a mistake. But the real culprit in that whole region between South Korea and China is North Korea. So how can, and I've always said, there's only two families in the Koreas. There's the Yang family and one other. There's two names that predominate within that Yang and one other. Anyway, and all the people there are interrelated from those two families, North and South. Even though they call it North Korea, that the 35th parallel that we created, 38th parallel we created at the end of the Korean War, we had where we were basically held at a stalemate with the help of the Chinese coming into that. Now you have a situation. We made peace with China enough to continue to do business, and that was with Nixon. Was that really a bargain with the devil? And now we are talking about what the result of all that was. We're making all these free tariff zones so that they don't pay any tax coming in. So Donald Trump is saying in his speech on the same point that you're talking about, Floyd, he said, I was down in San Diego. And I looked out at all these ships of a size I've never seen before, all loaded with automobiles. And where are they coming from? China. Toyota, Nissan, and so forth. Korea, Hyundai, and so on. All these cars are being shipped in.
From Asia.
From Asia, yes. And they're shipped to factories here. But the factories here are assembly plants. They're not creating the metal. They're not creating the frames. They're not creating the design for those cars. That's already done by the Chinese, by the Koreans, and other Asians. And it's going to get more so with India coming into the play here, because India is rapidly turning into a major force. The two countries that are a billion or more people are China and India. And remember, India not only speaks English, but they speak two or three other languages. Their people are educated to speak more than one language. We are not. And we reject learning other languages, and we reject it at our peril, I really do think. So anyway, Trump is saying all these things. He's knocking the big corporations because he says they come back in and they pay no tax for those cars. We try to trade beef for the cars, and we make a beef trade, and we call it an even-up trade. And when we sell cars into China, and he started off with the airplane that he tried to buy, or his friend was trying to buy. The tax for buying it from China was huge to get into China with the car, with the plane, and then to bring the plane out from China was a tax from China on the sale, both ends. But coming in here, it was free if you could get past the Chinese taxes. So they know what they're doing, and Trump is pointing all this out, and we're scratching our head. And the leadership of the Republican Party is so scared that one of their major organizers was on Morning Joe this morning saying they've decided that Trump has a real chance of winning this election. A flat-out forthright statement. So tonight is going to be an interesting culmination.
Well,
and
back in the,
Bernie Sanders is onto it as well. Sorry.
Back to the, no, that issue, though, as far as China growing in wealth, when you grow in wealth and you start to grow in your desire, it's kind of interesting. It's a cycle. The more money you have, the more money you tend to want. And China is...
Is it money, though, or is it something else?
Well, it's money and power, and they go hand in hand. And as they have that, they're interested in increasing their power in that Asian market around China, around Indonesia, and it's scaring the neighbors around China, Japan. Japan's starting to increase their military budget. They're getting scared. And at this particular point, in the past few years, China has really increased the amount of money it's put in the military budget. Now, on that topic, the United States, and this is from Bernie Sanders' campaign brochure, spends more on the military than the next nine biggest spending countries combined. We spend more in a military budget than the biggest nine other countries.
See, there was a Republican that once talked about that.
And
who was
well,
that?
Well, Eisenhower did.
That was Eisenhower, military-industrial complex.
And yet the Republicans are all saying, including Trump, that we need to spend even more money. And it's kind of a scary situation.
Boots on the ground.
Right now we see Obama starting to beef up our presence near Russia's borders. And as a consequence, we see Russia starting to increase their military budget and their military presence as well, because they see a threat from the United States because of what's happening. And is this making us safer when we beef up our military and causing Russia and China to also beef up their presence?
Well, the Russian situation has a lot to do with Ukraine. Ukraine has a lot to do with grain and the breadbasket of that whole region around what was the Soviet Union. And the surrounding and closing of Russia with NATO and Ukraine. They're having an election in Ukraine here shortly. It's going to decide between the separatists, which is to line up with Russia to get the Russian benefits and so forth, even though the Russian economy is sinking rapidly, and it is seriously sinking. When you have a bear that's economically starving, it can get really angry and lash out at the world. And that is, I can't think, where Russia is at. Now they're engaging with Syria. They're putting troops in down there to do an air base, to do this, to do that. That's the beginning. Remember Cuba, when Russia put stuff into Cuba with the
But Syria is close to their...
But Syria is the point. Assad is afraid of getting knocked off, and then the ISIS, which is Sunni-based ISIS, is going to take over Syria. But the Alawites are fleeing. They're not Muslim, and the Shia are fleeing out of there. They're ending up in Europe, and what do you do to staunch that thing? I think the Iran nuclear deal will do that, because then it'll be handed off to Iran. But that's my opinion.
Well, the Syria issue, because Syria borders close to Russia. It's right there almost in their backyard. And keep in mind, part of the downfall of Russia was because of what happened with the predecessor to Al-Qaeda. It was bin Laden. It was when Russia was involved in Afghanistan, and we were supplying Stinger missiles to Osama bin Laden, who eventually attacks us, the United States here. And we helped to defeat the Russians in Afghanistan, but also break up their Soviet empire because of our involvement. And we saw this as an opportunity to support these rebels, these Muslim radical extremist rebels.
We gave them weaponry, and we did it with what was the movie that was about that? Charlie Wilson's War, remember that? 941-745-1490, like your opinion or your thoughts on where we're going and with what's going to happen tonight with the CNN debate. But go on, Floyd, I'm sorry.
Yeah, with starring Tom Hanks, Charlie Wilson's War is a wonderful, interesting movie. But we helped to bring down the Soviet Union by supporting the same people now that have caused this huge mess in the world, ISIS. We're supporting people very similar to
them. Well, they all come out of, to make that clear, so people... I was watching a general on Al Jazeera yesterday, and he stated and corrected Juan Serrez, who's on, he used to be on NPR and PBS, and he said, well, Iran is such a serious thing on the Iran deal. And the guy says, I'm sorry. He says, the jihad of the Sunni is all... the problem. It's all Sunni-based problems that's been coming, you know, from where?
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi influence. Exactly. And the minute he said that, it wasn't 2 seconds, Suarez put an end to all the conversation and shut it down. They are terrified of openly criticizing Saudi Arabia because of what that does with the Republican politics, with the Bush family, and the real powers that be the oil companies in this country.
But it was the Sunni influence, the Saudi influence who was involved in Afghanistan.
It's the Al-Nuri, it's Al-Qaeda, it's the Taliban,
it's
and
ISIS,
all of that. And ISIS are all one and the same, just different degrees.
But the same basic sect. And also sponsored out of Saudi Arabia. So anyway, the United States helped to bring this on, helped to basically promote it. And I don't blame Russia for wanting to quell this. It's been a hot spot in their border. Chechnya and other different parts of
Chechnya,
Russia
yeah.
has had this huge mess with these Muslim
extremists. Well, the Chechnyans are all, you know, they're more active, more violent. Remember, this is what people do not get with the propaganda running out of this country about Iran from the right, from the religious right and from the political right. It's all... The danger is Iran. The danger is Iran.
And I'm not seeing it, and people who really study the region don't see it. People who study history don't see it. But at the same
They've
token...
They've never started a war. That's their history.
At the same token, yeah, they threaten, but they really haven't been involved. It's been from the other side of that. Back to Bernie Sanders. He was one of the very few senators who voted against the invasion of Iran. He voted for... going to Afghanistan against the Taliban, where these strikes were launched and planned, where bin Laden was hiding. He voted for that, but he voted against the invasion of Iraq, which did not support this. And caller, we're going to put you right on the air, caller. Welcome to the Morning Edge.
Good morning.
What do you have to add to our conversation?
Good morning, Floyd J. Good morning, August.
Good morning, Lawrence. You've had your cup of coffee this morning, Lawrence, or do you take tea? Just a question.
Well, yeah, I understand that. Thank you for asking. I was wondering, does death to America and the Jewish population be driven into the sea play a part at all into the conversation you're currently having?
Of course it does. And,
okay.
And the most dangerous...
You're interrupting me.
Oh, I'm listening. No, I was not interrupting and interjecting and agreeing.
You are interrupting me as well as...
Now, Augie...
I was having a conversation,
yeah,
you know.
You can't seem to agree with this individual.
No. So, he doesn't know when you usually
agree
with.
Yeah, and all we did was simply... It's like on a radio... In face-to-face
it's
person,
interactive.
Nod your head and say, yeah. Yes, I agree. Yeah. And so Augie was saying, yes, he agreed with Lawrence. So, Lawrence, we do agree that death to America and threatening to drive Israel
to the sea. But I was going to add to that, the major one who does that is Pakistan, who has nuclear.
Yeah, but we'll allow Lawrence to make his point.
Go ahead,
Lawrence, what point did you want to make?
Well, thank you, Floyd J., for allowing me to finish my point. As a caller on a radio call-in talk show.
Okay, good, Lawrence. So say it.
I want to say that during your discussion and explaining to all the low-level people out here, you neglected to say what I brought up. I think that is an important part to the Iran situation and the United States, and I find that somewhat
disappointing.
Yes, disappointing. As well as...
Yes, and Lawrence, we want to agree with you right there that Iran does say that. But somehow there's words and there's actions. When the Sunnis have attacked us in 9/11 and destroyed our trade tower, when the Sunnis were involved in ISIS, when the Sunnis have done all these atrocities that we see...
The actual behavior.
That's the actual behavior as opposed to the words.
Yeah.
So, again, if you want to go back to this grade school level of sticks and stones, I would rather tolerate the words and the verbal bellicose actions that we see from Iran than have to suffer the wounds of real actions that we have. And that's the point that we're making right now. Who is really launching the attacks in the United States? Who's hurting us the most? It is Iran right now. that's interested in fighting ISIS.
And they're pretty successful with it, actually.
And Russia as well. And Assad
the other one, it's got Erdogan, the head of Turkey, scared to death because Iran and the Kurds have united, and wherever they've gotten together, Ramadi and so forth, they've defeated the ISIS. We don't even have to go in there. Mm-hmm. But nobody wants to say this until the Iranian deal is done, that if Iran and the Kurds do this, it shakes the timbers of Erdogan, who wants to align more with Saudi Arabia, because he's a Sunni. He wants to control Turkey and bring it backwards in time in that way that the Sunnis do in the extreme Sharia law. The Sharia law is practiced in Saudi Arabia with head cuttings and hangings and burnings and stonings. In the Sharia law of Iran, it's jailing and censoring. Not good, but certainly better than in Saudi Arabia.
So, again, to answer Lawrence's thing, we agree with his concerns. I think they're valid. But at the same token, there are words,
verbal
and there
insult.
Are actions. And yeah. The actions, when it yeah. costs 4,000 lives or 3,000 lives in the
and
World Trade Center.
Millions of Iraqi.
And what happened? Lawrence, you want to add to that,
Go
please?
Go ahead, Lawrence.
Yes, I believe that there are actions to words. And in the Jewish religion and in Israel, there is a doctrine, a statement, never again. And when you have, and that is related to the Holocaust in Germany and Neville Chamberlain and so forth, that it sounds like I'm hearing. But I want to point out to you that if Iran acts on their actions, there will be millions of people that are dead, and so you will say, oh, I was wrong, and we should have taken their bellicose statements as serious.
Well that's a good point.
I think that what his point really is, if, he kept saying, if, and if in the last 200 years Iran had started anything, that would be provable. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they have not, actually. So you kind of go with, nah. Look at Pakistan, who already has the bomb. Look at the nuclear weapons they have, and half of them are Muslim. And the Muslims, again, are creating a problem there. But they're the Sunni Muslim. Again, it's the troublemakers in the extreme Mosaic law called Sharia, the law of Moses, which is all about vengeance. And they exploit vengeance in every single way you can imagine, using the Old Testament and perverting it from one way to the other. The extremes in any society that uses the Mosaic law is a tendency for power and fear. It's what they operate under.
And we have those nations on our planet who want to threaten the United States. We have latest North Korea, and Kim Jong-un is saying that he's developing more nuclear and better nuclear weapons and better delivery methods.
He would not.
And he's threatening to get the United States right now.
He'd be gone tomorrow if he does it. And as far as getting the bomb in Iran, if they get the bomb, they will be dead from their own action. If they fire off a bomb into Israel, Israel is dead, and so is Iran. It would be a total disaster on both sides of that. Because they're to the west, the prevailing winds alone would wipe out thousands of people. This thing is a silly argument, I think.
Well, anyway, but it is worthy of bringing out. I think Lawrence does make some good points.
Well, what's your final
what
point,
we have
Lawrence?
If he wants, he can hang on. We're going to take a commercial
break.
Yeah. We'll be back in about a minute and a half.
The man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato. 4450 South Tamiami Trail, Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, with the animals,
this part of the morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic.
And we are back at the Morning Edge. We are back at the Morning Edge. And our we caller, were talking about, I think our caller's left us. Caller, are you still there?
No, I think he's gone. He had no final comment. I guess okay. We won the argument. He quit.
Well, I wasn't looking at winning.
It was just a matter
of taking a look at different opinions and seeing if we can...
You are what you do, not what you say. You know, in Iran, they had a guy by the name of Ahmadinejad, and he was doing the same yelling and threatening stuff that Lawrence had been talking about, and it's true. Some of these clowns over there in the theocratic part of the government, the public in general is totally with us in the United States. The general public is not rabid anti-American like has been stated, but when you have a minority in power like the Nazis, which is what I think Lawrence's concerns are about, and the Holocaust was built upon the fear of the Jew taking away food out of the mouths of the rest of the people, so we had the German thugs had to eliminate that part of the problem. And that is the one part of the problem that Trump offers. When he talks about Latins the way he does, he grades them, he creates a schizophrenia, a split in the minds of the public, and when you split people one against the other, one group against another, you end up in these kinds of bad outcomes, and thugs end up enforcing that sort of behavior. So you see, when you want a democracy, you can't have this jingoism, nativism that Trump is proposing relative to Latins and building a big wall. The Russians tried it in East Berlin. It doesn't work. The Jews have done it in Gaza. It's not working. The antagonisms roll and roll and roll. So Bernie has some different views on this. So go ahead.
And I liked his different views. So again, I wanted to reiterate that he voted against invading Iraq. Hillary voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
He was in favor of going to Afghanistan where the Taliban were and where bin Laden came from. Well, he came from Saudi Arabia, but he was camped in Afghanistan. Other quotes, and again, call us if you disagree with these positions of Bernie Sanders. These are basically well-documented facts. The richest 400 Americans own over $2.2 trillion in wealth, more than the bottom half of America combined.
Yeah. The Waltons alone have wealth. Again, they're part of that half of 1%. The thing that Bernie is really offering are some great proposals. The other thing that Bernie is doing by going to Liberty University, that is the what is the name of that big religious leader that
is it Pat Roberts?
It's Pat Roberts, but it's someone like him. The other guy. Maybe somebody from the audience out there can call us and remind us of who the great religious leader that runs Liberty University. But Falwell.
Jerry Falwell.
So, get the mind going. Sometimes the brain catches up. He's talking to them. They're required to attend, as they did when Ted Cruz went there. They attended out of requirement. So Bernie Sanders got that and got that going. And to his great credit, he got great applause in that very conservative environment. So he made huge points. He had standing ovations from this very conservative youth crowd. And it's just an interesting set of circumstances that Bernie has put forward. Bernie is, I think, a uniter, not a divider. And so do we have another caller?
It's Lawrence somehow. He said he was disconnected by accident.
Sure.
So Lawrence, did you have one more comment to make on your point? We were enjoying our conversation there.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering if you would add into the equation the oath of office for the President of the United States, specifically to protect and defend. Do you not think that Iran, its supreme leader, making comments like death to America and they're going to wipe all the Jews off into the ocean and kill them, Do you not think that that falls under the protect and defend situation?
It might. It might. I think that's a real point. And I was reading Tom Friedman's article about this very thing, and he said if Obama goes to sleep at night for the next 15 years, he should be concerned that this agreement holds up. It will hold up for at least the 15 years. And I think by that time there'll be so much commerce back and forth that this will be a moot question.
I think that's true too. But keep in mind, we have North Korea that just this week is threatening to nuke the United States and enhance their nuclear weapons and their delivery methods. So we have the same exact thing happening right now with North Korea. We've had it with Russia.
North Korea is a bigger deal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so, too. We've had Khrushchev hammering his shoe at the UN, vowing to destroy the United States. We've had this in the past, but you have to look at what is the real threat. And do you go and start a war with Iran and make the situation worse? Keep in mind, we did that with Iraq, and we unleashed ISIS. We have this huge humanitarian crisis of refugees all over Europe right now, and now coming to America, only because of what we did to Iraq by destabilizing that government and helping to destabilize Syria as well.
To understand that a little more so, the head of Iraq was a Sunni, Saddam Hussein, who kept under threat of death every imam and every Ayatollah that might show up there. The Ayatollah wasn't
and
there.
And he was the ultimate enemy of Osama bin Laden.
Yep. And he did not like the extremists coming out of Saudi Arabia. But by the same token, Saudi wanted to keep a Sunni in charge of that country. They wanted to keep a Sunni in charge of Yemen. They want to put a Sunni in charge of Tehran. So the more extreme you are in Tehran, the more you play into Saudi Arabia's desire to control everything. 80% of every mosque is mortgaged and owned basically by Saudi Arabia. Every imam that goes into a mosque is coming out of Saudi Arabia with Wahhabism intent, that is to kill, and within this country as well. So when we see these young kids influenced by this vengeful thing, your life is worthless, we'll give you virgins if you become a jihadist, we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll do the other thing, and come and gain peace with us, and we'll feed you, we'll pat you on the back, we'll put money in your pocket, and we'll send you over and fight against the enemies of Muhammad.
But with Lawrence's logic, we went into Iraq, we unleashed ISIS, we lost 4,000 American soldiers, many more than that were wounded.
We
lost a trillion of our dollars, over a trillion dollars.
We killed a million Iraqis, too.
Yeah, so what have we really accomplished by doing this because of these alleged perceived threats that we have a preemptive war, which is what Lawrence and his allies are asking for. Preemptive war is basically what Netanyahu
is like a little boy from a little country with a big gun in his hand, and he's waving it around, and he's whispering in the ear of the leaders of this country, "Oh, those are terrible people. You've got to do this.
They're not the good guys. They're not the good guys, but they're not nearly."
You know, they've got another phone ringing somewhere.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I don't know where that phone comes from. I think it's from Augie.
No, I'm afraid you may have a point there.
Yeah, Augie's got a new ringer on his phone. We're going to turn him off for a second, so remind me to turn him back on again. So that's an idea right there to consider that we did this, what Lawrence is suggesting, that we put people into Iraq.
We spent a trillion dollars, almost $3 trillion on these two wars. I don't even think we should have gone into Afghanistan. I think Afghanistan was there. They left it alone. China has left it alone. And China has contracts with the Afghans and protection by the Taliban to go in and extract rare earth. And what do you need rare earth for? You need it for all your electronic equipment. It's in there one way or the other. All the chemicals and so forth come from rare earth. So when you have that arrangement, and a peaceful one for the Chinese, why can't we do something like that? Are we idiots? Of course we are, by reacting and taking this little boy with a big gun called Netanyahu and listening to him. He makes more trouble, he represses his own people, and he encourages it, and those people who support him do the same. So this, to me, is where they're not friends of America when they act in this fashion. So.
And we have a second caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the Morning Edge. Do you have a comment on her to weigh in?
Good morning, Morning Edge. This is John down in Sarasota.
Welcome,
morning,
John.
John. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah. No, and it's always good when I can to hear the Morning Edge. Let's talk about the best way to protect and defend this country, and let's talk about. Hello?
No, keep going, keep going.
Okay.
There's another caller.
I'm sorry. Let's...
Nope, you cut off John. Call back, John.
Call back, John. I went to lock you in, and somehow I locked you out.
We locked you out accidentally, so just call right back, please. But, John is... this protect and defend is what he was talking about, and I do think that is the point. You don't always protect the country by going to war and sacrificing blood and treasure just to do that. In the case of Chamberlain and Hitler, there was really a foolish behavior in one respect, but in another, the attempt to make peace was what that was about. I think we may have...
John, is that you again?
Mr. Schmidt, talk about Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, let's talk about him. But we're going to talk to John if John calls back. Here we go. I think. All right.
Okay, John,
I got disconnected. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we do. We heard you before, but we disconnected you accidentally. That was.
Yeah, I went to lock you in, and somehow I locked you out. But welcome back, John. I like your idea about how we protect our country.
It was clearly a plot by our negligent President Obama to cut me off. Clearly.
Okay.
How can a black man ever run a government? My God.
The best way to ensure that it never again happens, and the best way to protect and defend and this country, is to have inspectors on the ground in Iran guaranteeing that 19,000 to 20,000 centrifuges go down to 5,000 or 6,000, that 95% of their current uranium stores are depleted, that the plutonium reactor that is being built in Iraq is going to be decommissioned and filled with cement, okay, and that if somebody like David Petraeus and Colin Powell believe this is the best way to ensure never again and the best way to protect and defend this country, okay, I'm on board with that.
I couldn't agree more.
The issue is not that we ignore these outrageous statements that come from the leaders of Iran, like we didn't ignore the outrageous statements that came from the Soviet Union when Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. Okay, the issue is, are we going to have inspectors on the ground for the next 10 to 15 years, okay, observing everything from uranium mining to the facilities, and absolutely guaranteeing that there is not going to be stockpiles that are created and further development. And everybody also agrees that if we just let this agreement fall flat now, that Iran is going to have a bomb in 6 months.
John,
there's no dispute about that.
John, isn't the argument the other way as well? In other words, when you have someone like Netanyahu calling for the destruction of Iran in because of the statements coming out of Iran, who do you believe more will act in that fashion? In other words,
all the military experts I've heard over the last year or so say that, we could probably take out the facilities, probably, but that would only last a couple of years. And then there's no stopping.
My point to you is who, on which side, or what circumstance would be the most likely to act in this reckless fashion, I think reckless anyway, but the acting of attacking anyone, who is the most likely attacker in all of this?
Well, my response to that is, first of all, acknowledge that, that the leaders of Israel, and there is some division among the leadership in Israel, former Mossad leaders are with this agreement, but they have every right to be afraid and to feel that this is really an existential threat. And so the issue is not that this, that Israel is at risk and leadership might be tempted to act militarily. That it's a very real threat. The question is how best to ensure and diminish the threat. And from everything that I've read and everything that I see, it's better to have neutral inspectors on the ground over the next 10 to 15 years monitoring what happens rather than having nobody there.
Exactly. The other thing that was interesting, the day of the announcement, the next day, the German business people were in Tehran cutting financial deals. And people act like it's a decision of the United States of and by themselves on this whole thing. If the United States walks away from the deal, the other six or five nations will certainly continue doing business with Iran. They're going to get, the claim is $150 billion gain for Iran at this point, but there's penalties for Tehran if they have the problem in the monies they owe. So there's really not that much money, but the future business that Tehran is going to benefit from is where the ball game changes, in my opinion.
Well, what John said that I like is how do we diminish the threat? Lawrence is correct. Yes, there is a threat. We agree North Korea is a potential threat.
That to me is
Iran,
a big one.
Iran is a threat. That's true. Russia is a threat. China is a threat. But how do we diminish those threats? And we don't diminish them by making them more our enemy. We diminish them by opening up trade alliances with them, by opening up more friendly corridors, as opposed to basically stonewalling against them and making them our enemy. If you recall,
and by having internet, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
But one last thing: if you recall, when Bush first took office, he defined this axis of evil right from the very beginning, and he was anxious for a war. He had the warmongering and the drumbeat to go to battle right away. When you start defining and making these threats
and
against these perceived enemies,
mm-hmm.
yes,
mm-hmm.
and you basically make the world mm-hmm. a lot less stable. And from the very first days of office, Bush was starting to set the seeds for this war by finding enemies.
Vengeance. We were claiming vengeance was ours, and we needed to act upon it. Go ahead, John. You were going to say
that's
something.
That's why it matters who the hell sits in the Oval Office. But see, I'm confident because I know that Donald Trump has written The Art of the Deal, so I'm absolutely confident that he's going to turn everything around.
Upside down.
Oh, and by the way, the new motto for the Morning Edge should be to remind every listener in Manatee and Sarasota County that it was the Sarasota Republican Party in the last 5 years.
Man of the Year.
Twice.
Donald Trump was man of the Year.
Yeah. Acclaimed Donald Trump as the Statesman of the Year and invited him to Sarasota County to give him the award.
Twice in the last five years.
Donald Trump.
Yep. He definitely, that was, I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
Well, he had good foresight, though. Got to give you credit.
Well,
because Trump is doing a remarkable job.
He's done the one thing he's done, my honest opinion, and see what you think of this, John, by making the Hispanics and a wall between us and them in the South, not in the North, but a door in it. He basically has the jingoistic idea that the Germans did in getting rid of the illegals, the criminals,
and the Jews.
and the Jews. He made enemies that we had to get rid of, that they were going. But his Lebensraum was an
argument. USA! USA!
Yes,
USA.
Exactly. And American fries, French fries, all this jingoism that's been running around in the Republican Party, based on a fundamental primary ignorance that seems to be played upon, and there's no calling them to heel over it. Bill O'Reilly and all of these people that do this stuff.
Go
ahead. No, I'm just yapping.
And the greatest irony that it goes, you know, unsaid amidst all the little giggles and about Donald Trump and isn't this entertainment? We can't. The greatest irony about this is that the reason that the jobs have gone overseas, okay, and the reason, one of the main reasons that the middle class has been destroyed over the last 30 to 35 years, are friends of Donald Trump. It's Wall Street, okay, and it's the corporate leadership that has shipped middle-class jobs overseas for cheaper labor costs. The environmental standards, etc. Okay, it's not brown-skinned people that have caused the shipping of jobs overseas and the diminishment of the middle class.
Well, actually on that
it's
point,
it's been the corporate structure that has
incentivized,
has ruined the Rust Belt. Ruined cities like Baltimore, Pittsburgh,
everywhere.
You know, all across this land. As you described earlier about the small town, I believe you were talking about Illinois. Okay, Wall Street wanted to get quarterly profits up. They wanted to bust unions and get labor costs down. You know, so jobs went overseas. You know, and so this notion that it's the Mexicans and the Hispanics, and the criminal element that's coming across the border.
Oh, that is the word he uses. He calls them the criminal element. And he doesn't...
Oh, they're rapists, don't you know?
All of... Well, and then the sanctuary cities where they're hiding them, they have to be eliminated. I mean, how do you go around as president, executive...
USA! Mm-hmm. USA! Mm-hmm. USA!
So he's really put a stock thing. Now he says he's a full believer in the Bible. So all of the vengeance elements that are in the Bible now can be applied to these terrible, malicious, criminal people. And you take away their sanctuary. You drive them out in the open like rats. This is exactly what Hitler did, and he referred to the Jews as rats in the Holocaust.
Oh, no, exactly. He's playing the nativist,
yep,
racist card.
Yep.
And again, remember how Donald Trump was introduced to the political scene, 3 and 4 years ago, back in 2010 and 11, okay, where he first entered on the political stage and actually started to get percentages of the Republican Party. How did he do that? He accused the President of the United States of not being...
Oh, not being an American.
He was a birther.
Stay
he
on
made
this.
He made the first African-American president of the United States produce his birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
This is what kind of a vicious predator this man is.
Well, he was successful. He did get the birth certificate out there in the open, so give him credit.
We're going to have Dennis on Friday, John, but if you want to stay past the musical break, you can talk a little longer if you like.
The three scariest words right now in the English and the American lexicon is Donald Trump, Commander in Chief.
Oh my God!
That's a good way to end, John. We want to thank you for your call.
Right, please do, John.
Okay. Thank you for the show.
Thank you, John. Well, that was wonderful, and I think Lawrence was behaved for most of the time. And
you should have heard his calls coming.
Oh, I bet he
was. The childish behavior. He just wants to, and just the noises.
You know what? He's, well, you know, we probably should go out and
you're
to
listening
a candy
to 1490
store. I'll
AM.
I'll wait for the break here, and I'll say one more thing.
WPR.
And
Bradenton,
buy some,
Sarasota,
and award
Tampa
the,
Bay.
The big candy sucker to the callers who deserve it the most, and that way we can
I don't know
reward.
What he's trying to compete for. But anyway, thank you for listening to The Morning Edge. We'll be back with Dennis Malley on Friday.
Absolutely.